Good morning, everyone. On a brilliant sunny day, Monday, February 22nd, it is 9:19 on the nose. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, brought to you each and every weekday morning by Hillbean Auto Body. Remember, if it happens to you, take it to Hillbean. We're going to launch something new today on the Mary Griffith Show. Once every month, representatives from Cornerstone Mental Health Services will be dropping by to talk a little bit about mental health. And Lord knows we probably ignore our general health, but at least we know about heart disease, and at least we've heard that we should have a colonoscopy. None of us ever do any of these things, of course, but we're familiar with them. But we really don't talk about mental health enough. So the executive director of Cornerstone, Chris Park, is here, and we're just going to start the conversation with a little bit about Cornerstone. Tell us about Cornerstone.
Well, thanks, Mary. Cornerstone's a not-for-profit mental health counseling agency here in town. We've actually been around since 1947. We offer medication evaluation and follow-up medication monitoring, and then also outpatient counseling. Thanks to United Way of Adams County, we do offer that on a sliding scale as well for people who have really high deductible health insurance policies or don't have any insurance at all. So we try to make that very affordable and easily accessible to people. During the pandemic that's going on, we've made the availability of people to register online with us, so they don't actually have to come into the office, and then we can do telehealth services as well. We continue to offer in-person services for those folks who want to get out of the house with social distancing and all the other precautions in place, of course.
Yeah, well, things are going to start changing here, I hope, very quickly. Looks like, we're going to be coming to the end of some of this pandemic restrictions. But until we do, we really have, in any normal year, winter is tough.
You bet.
Winter is tough on people with mental health issues on a normal year, but the pandemic and the lockdown and not really being able to go out and maybe socialize as much as you'd like, I think that probably the best mental health care in America happens every morning at the local fast food restaurant where everybody just gets together, has a cup of coffee, checks in on each other, and cares about each other. We haven't had that for a while. So let's talk about mental health, not only in the time of COVID, but in the time of severe cold and gray days. Now, fortunately, today we have a nice sunny day, but that's not typical in the winter. And around here, you can get a disease called seasonal affective disorder. I have this disease, and it basically causes a chemical imbalance in your body, and it causes you to have depression, seasonal depression. And so this is something that is real. It's not in your head. And you can be treated for this. And there are treatments that are available for this to help lift your mood. And sometimes we do have to get some artificial help to lift our mood.
Of course. And actually, the research is still out, whether it's a chemical imbalance or hormonal.
I probably got them both.
Some researchers are pointing towards the hormone melatonin, which affects sleep a lot for people, and other research is pointing to serotonin, which is a neurochemical, as you alluded to. There's a couple different treatments that are available for folks. On the hormonal side, the light box. You can go out and purchase a full-spectrum light box, which helps people with that sunshine that you mentioned you don't get during the winter months. And some people see a big improvement in their mood as a result of just doing that. Up to 15 minutes, maybe once or twice a day. Other people, though, do require medications, and so there's a wide variety of medications out there now to help impact those neurochemicals, as you talked about.
And so the thing about it, sometimes the reason it's so hard for people to realize that there's a problem is because it sneaks up on them gradually. All of a sudden, it's January and February. Now they've been light-deprived, you know, since October, really. And suddenly all the effects of this serotonin drop, this melatonin drop, this hormonal and chemical dropping, now suddenly, for no particular reason, they can't handle, they're overly anxious, they can't handle anything, they're crying, whatever. And they're like, what's wrong with me? Nothing has happened. No trigger has happened in my life. I haven't experienced a death or I haven't, you know, something really horrifying hasn't happened. Why am I unable to cope? And that's because these things build up over time.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, so it's like a slow burn. In the beginning, this is more typical for women. It also usually starts in young adulthood. And so you may not recognize what's going on for a few years as you hit these lows in the winter. Weight gain's associated with it, kind of social isolation's associated with it, as well as wanting to sleep more, and obviously feelings of depression. So if you notice those things are starting to happen kind of on a seasonal basis, usually would be peaking, you know, in the December, January, February timeframe when our winters are the worst, then that might be something to take a look at.
And what are some of the symptoms of that? Because, you know, just general sadness or a feeling of despair, or I think most appropriately, I think a lot of women especially, men too, can relate to this. They didn't necessarily feel sad or bad, but they just wanted to go to bed and curl up in a ball and not really integrate themselves into the world. It's like a complete withdrawal from humanity. And if you've got that problem already and then COVID on top of it exacerbates it by the fact that nobody really expects you to go out and do anything, days can go by before you come out of your cocoon.
Oh, yes. COVID has certainly made things more challenging for people. A lot of people working from home, so that in and of itself can create some isolation. You know, you're getting your groceries delivered now, you're ordering from Amazon now, so, and all those things are encouraged right now. However, they also all result in you not having any social contact with anybody.
Yeah, the grocery store ladies are some of my best friends. You know, again, you have to understand you're not going to have a permanent relationship with them. It's very superficial, but they do care about you. You know, they do. They'll remember, oh, how's your grandkid? Or you
sure.
say to them,
sure.
oh, how was your vacation? Did you enjoy going? It's not that these are earth-shattering, you know, emotional entanglements. It's the fact that you are using your brain to make that emotional connection with other people. And when you're not seeing the grocery store bagger, when you're not seeing the person serving you coffee at your local, you know, fast
right,
food restaurant,
right.
there is kind of a loss
oh,
to,
for sure.
to humanity. Well, you know, these people are really, most, some of us wouldn't even know their last name or know anything about them, except
right.
they're always there on Tuesdays, and now I haven't seen them for a year, and I wonder what happened to them.
Right. Yeah, we're social creatures. I mean, we need social connections. We need to be connected to others. And as you talked about, whether those are intimate, close relationships, or more superficial, it's you kind of need that whole spectrum of human interaction. And you know, COVID certainly plays a part in that. And getting back to kind of the seasonal affective disorder, that's kind of a can be a symptom is wanting to withdraw from that. Which obviously just compounds the other symptoms, as you talked about, not wanting to get out of bed and feeling down and not having any energy, weight gain, all those things that are all symptoms of kind of what's going on.
Yeah, on a day like today, the very best advice would be to pick a place where there's no ice on the sidewalk, go out and take a brisk walk and look up, not at the sun, but look up in that blue sky and get your eyes wide open and soak that in through every, you know, available ocular pore you have.
Yes.
That's the perfect advice. Unfortunately, by the time you get SAD or seasonal affective disorder, you just want to lay in bed. You don't want to do any of that. So people need to call Cornerstone or some other mental health provider or talk to their general practice, general practitioner, because, again, there's no need to go through this cycling. There's no need to suffer, because as long as it takes you to get down in the dumps, when spring is here and everybody else is starting to perk up, you're going to be lagging behind.
Right.
And there's no reason to waste the beauty of spring on having, you know, a what is a mental disorder. And when you say mental health disorder, people get afraid that you're going to, you know, get a high-powered rifle and start shooting at people from a tall building, and that's part of the problem. You know, if, you know, I'm diabetic and I don't, if, when I tell people I'm diabetic, they don't scurry away from me and go to the other side of the room in fear. But if you tell somebody, well, I'm being treated for, you know, a mental health issue, if they're absent education about how mild that can be and how easily that can be corrected with medication, they look at you in a different way.
Yeah, stigma is still a huge problem in the mental health field. It's
why,
really,
you know, we've been I've been in this business now for 30 years. I've been talking with people like you for 30 years about stigma. When are we going to get over this stigma?
Boy, I wish I had an answer to that.
I mean, it's gotten better, I think.
I do think it's improved. I would agree with that. You know, I think Quincy in and of itself is a little bit different, just because we're an old German Catholic private, you know, kind of family, keep your business out of yourself town.
Suck it up, Buttercup.
That's right. And so I do think that that adds another layer of complexity here in our local community. But I think we are making some progress in that area. The more people like yourself and other people, other celebrities who are coming out and talking about mental health as a problem, as an issue in their family, whether it's themselves or a sibling or a parent, all that helps other people to feel more comfortable to acknowledge that they have a mental health issue, which is, as you've talked about, just so similar to a physical health issue. You know, there's really not a difference there. And so the more we can get people to be open about that, to share that, to rely on each other for support, also will help decrease mental health problems as people are sharing those sorts of things with each other.
You know, I liken it to the fact that sometimes we do stupid things, like, you know, maybe you're trying to do something and you break your leg and you have to go to the emergency room. You're very embarrassed that you did something stupid that caused your leg to be broken, but you're not so embarrassed that you're not going to go have your leg set. You may not want to tell the whole world, well, I was jumping off the roof, I don't know why, but I thought that'd be a good idea and I broke my leg. But the bottom line is, the actual broken leg is not a cause for shame or anything like that. So if you're listening today and you are suffering from what I, you know, I'm not diagnosing you, but if it's really bad in January and February and you've noticed that for the last few years, there's probably something chemical with melatonin or serotonin in your body that you're not getting enough of that into your brain to get your emotions evened out and on even keel. And that's when you need to call Cornerstone or call your primary care physician or call somebody and say, I'd like to explore whether this might be happening to me.
For sure. And you know, I want to just take a minute to point out, a lot of people think medication right away, which we obviously offer at Cornerstone. However, there's lots of research to show that counseling also impacts those same neurochemicals that you're talking about. So connecting with somebody else, getting back to that whole idea of connection. When you go into counseling and you sit down and you share those sorts of things and you have someone who's listening and being empathetic and helping you think it through, that also impacts your neurochemicals. So everything that we're doing on a daily basis has an impact on our brain chemicals. So you, if you're a person who says, you know, I don't really want to take medication, there are other options out there that will impact those same neurochemicals that medication will. So there's really different paths to take here for treatment. And Cornerstone does offer all those different paths for you.
Yeah, I remember when I was really 30 years ago and I hadn't discovered what was wrong with me. I remember I kept canceling appointments. You know, friends would say, let's go to the movies, you know. And finally, these friends showed up at my door because I said, no, I don't feel like going out. And basically, they were like worried about me. So I appreciate that. But the husband said, snap out of it. And I'm like, oh. You know, don't you think I would snap out of it if I could?
Right.
I mean, so I think the most important thing is if you suspect that somebody may be having a problem, you know, approach them in the most caring and loving way that you can and say, you know, you just don't want to go to lunch anymore. Of course, I've noticed you don't want to do anything. Well, it's COVID. So
you don't want to Zoom meet with me anymore.
You don't want to Zoom meet with me anymore. You don't want to, you know, see me through a glass window. But yeah, kind of look out for each other and know that offering them help and resources is the most important thing you can do, and never ever make light of somebody's mental health condition, because it is no more under their control than somebody who has bronchitis. You wouldn't shame them, you know. I'm shaming you because you have carpal tunnel syndrome. You shouldn't have gotten that, you know. So just use that in mind. My guest today is Chris Park. He's the executive director of Cornerstone, and we're going to meet every month and kind of have a mental health checkup here on the radio. Now, maybe you've got some questions. Maybe you've got some comments. We'd love to hear from you at 223-9300, 1-800-228-WTAD. Dial now if you've got a question or comment, and you'll be the first up. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Chris Parker is my guest today. He's the executive director of Cornerstone, and we asked for folks to call in if they had a question or comment. We have a caller waiting patiently. Good morning. You're on the Mary Griffith Show.
Yes. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
I just wanted to tell you that a lady that we had watched for years admitted that she was bipolar, and I went to, it was Jane Palvey. You know Jane Palvey.
Jane Pauley from CBS Sunday Morning. Mm-hmm.
And I went to ask the doctor, is there certain levels of bipolar, people being bipolar?
That's a good question. When you get diagnosed, that's a great question for Chris Parker. Kanye West has been diagnosed, or at least he claims he's been diagnosed with bipolar disease.
Right.
Jane Pauley has admitted she has bipolar disease. What are the variations on a theme when somebody says they have a disease? And, of course, a lot of it, I guess, depends on what kind of treatment they're getting.
Yeah, so bipolar comes in a variety of forms. There's what technically it's called bipolar 1, bipolar 2. Cyclothymia is also in the bipolar family. And so they range from very mild symptoms of ups and downs. Bipolar is just having both depression and what's called mania or hypomania, which is just a reduced form of mania. And so you can have a very low level, minor ups and downs, or it can go all the way to having major depressive disorder where you don't function very well, you're not able to take care of life's kind of business. And then the other end of that, the other pole of that, and the bipolar diagnosis is mania, which can be debilitating at times. You can have delusions, you can have hallucinations, you usually have lots of energy, you don't sleep, make a lot of really rash, impulsive decisions. And so there's a whole spectrum of bipolar out there, all the way from very minor impacts on life all the way up to requiring possibly hospitalization and really intensive interventions.
And this is why it's so difficult to have discussions about mental health, because when people have a mental health disease and they're not fully controlled, in other words, their therapy isn't working or their medication isn't working or they're not quite all the way to stability, they do things publicly that make us, that we label as, excuse the term, crazy.
Sure.
And if you're a celebrity, you're really in the hot seat, and the Free
right.
Britney movement, you know, and stuff like that, where, you know, obviously Britney needed a great deal of help 10 to 15 years ago, and now she may be completely in control of her disease, just like her diabetes could be under control or her COPD could be under control. So when you see someone like Jane Pauley, who's obviously high functioning, she's able to do a 2-hour broadcast every
right.
week on TV, that should be the face we also see, not just the Kanye Wests of the world, or not just our famous starlet who's, you know, gone off the deep end and, you know, torched her own house or something. But the bipolar has low lows and high highs. And depending on how low you go in the trough and how high you go on the
right.
top, that's how bad, quote unquote, your bipolar is, and the harder
right.
it is to adjust. But people that you don't want to have a credit card in your hand if you've got mania.
No.
Because again, instead of being overly depressed, you're overly happy, really, and there's no consequences to any of your actions.
Yeah, and that can also be a problem with treatment. Oftentimes, one of the issues with people when they're experiencing mania, which is oftentimes when people recognize they need treatment, can be that they don't want to stop that feeling. And so they don't want to go get medication or get therapy or do anything to bring them kind of back. I mean, they've experienced both ends of this, and it feels good. And so, and they want to believe they can control that. And so that can create some difficulties in helping people get to kind of that more stable mood.
And the stability there is interesting because I've been through this a little bit myself. I was taking some medication, and it was working only too well. And it happened to be near Christmas time, and I was a little over-medicated, and I whipped out the credit card, and I bought presents online. This was, you know, 20 years ago when online shopping was unusual. I bought presents for everybody I knew. They all got something from this catalog. You know, everybody got something from me that Christmas.
Right.
And when that bill came, it was like, you kidding me? So there are some serious consequences to these things and living with people who have manic and depressive mood swings. You know, can be a challenging
yes.
for the partners of these people. But the bottom line is you just have to work hard with your mental health provider, with your counselor, with your caregiver to make sure that your medications and everything gets into stability. Is that, I know whenever anybody dies, like Rush Limbaugh passing away, a lot of people want to know more about lung cancer. Rush, a former smoker but had quit, you know, anytime a celebrity succumbs to something, there's an uptick in wanting to know about it. unfortunately, when most celebrities have a public face of mental health disorder, it's at a very volatile time in their life when nobody would really want that to be the face that they show. Is that part of it too?
Sure. I think that goes back to the stigma piece that we talked about a few minutes ago. You know, it's okay to bring up lung cancer for someone who's passed, but do family members want you talking about their bipolar disorder if that was a component of why they ended up passing? And so I think as we continue to combat stigma and reduce that, I think that'll become less of an issue at that point in someone's life as well.
Well, it's almost a dog chasing its own tail. We have to have more people be willing to get treatment in order for there not to be a stigma, because again, there is no, you know, I'm going to the doctor on Wednesday, and I'm not keeping that a secret. I'm not going around telling everybody, but, you know, like Steve knows I'm going to the doctor on Wednesday just because it may affect my schedule here. You know, it's not a thing I'm embarrassed about. There's nothing I can do about it. I have to have a procedure. You know, I would tell Steve, you know, if I had to go in and have a mental health exam too, but most people wouldn't, you know, and a lot of people, again, you know, they wouldn't tell everything they know about their medical. You know, I'm going in for a procedure. I don't want you to know if it's on my pinky toe or, you know, my left eyelash. You don't, none of your business.
Right.
So, you know, we do have a right to our own privacy. Another thing that really comes up a lot, and we talk about it a lot, and I want to get your take on it. We're going to take a break. But Chris Parker, director of Cornerstones, we've had so many people call here in years past when we've tried to talk about this issue and say, I don't want it on my record that I received mental health counseling because they may not give me my firearm owner's identification card. And that's really important to hunters in our area. So we'll talk a little bit about that. So are there downsides of seeking mental health help? It is 9:43. We're going to step aside and head up to the IRSA Farmers Cooperative. We'll be right back. And your phone calls are welcome at 223-9300, 1-800-228-9823. Little Rita Coolidge from 1980 as we talk about mental health. And, of course, one of the things that can impact your mental health is a horrifying breakup, divorce, loss of a spouse through death. But Chris Parker is here with Cornerstone, and I asked you before we went into the break about firearm owner ID cards. Is getting mental health counseling, is that a red flag for those who give out those firearm owner ID cards?
No. If you seek outpatient mental health care, you shouldn't have any issues with a FOID card.
Wouldn't even know it, would they? I mean, it's confidential.
When you go for a FOID card, you also do waive your right to confidentiality regarding your mental health care.
Okay.
However, the only time that that's really going to come into play is if you've been involuntarily hospitalized, or if you've been committed to a mental health or substance abuse treatment facility by a court, board, commission, or other lawful authority. So it really is getting to the point where you are being told you have to go get care and you aren't doing that. And
so just seeking care voluntarily on your own is not going to prevent you from getting your FOID card. So that should be a myth that we can bust today. Do not fear that. The winter. We're talking today about the winter. And, of course, today when you come, it's a bright, sunny day. How nice. But the winter is tough on people with mental health issues. What are some of the mental health issues that come to the forefront? I know that suicide numbers go up. What kind of things happen in the winter and why?
Well, certainly winter, as well as, you know, we've talked a little bit about COVID this morning, which seems like it comes into every conversation we have today. But COVID has certainly raised our suicide rates amongst both children and adults. And that all has to do with social isolation, as we talked about earlier, that lack of social connection, lack of being involved, lack of being able to do the things that we like to do and get pleasure from. For kids, that's been sports, it's been cheerleading, that's been dance, that's been prom and homecoming, all those normal activities that our youth have had to miss out on. And for adults, it's not being able to be involved in your social club or not being able, even going into work for some people. You know, if you don't have an active social life outside of work, going into work, and as you talked about earlier, going to your grocery store, all those sorts of incidental contacts are ways for some people to have a social life.
Yeah.
And so winter also plays a part in that.
Winter is hard, and now COVID-19 has made it even harder. And yet, ironically, I know people that are very much loners. Now, they say they're loners, but they usually have a significant other they live with.
Right.
So they are getting some kind of socialization. The true hermit is a very rare breed. Most of us need social interaction. Some of us can get it even by reading a book, almost an imaginary social interaction, if you want to call it that. But the best way to stay healthy is to try to have as much experience with other people as possible. Would that be just a general rule of thumb?
Yeah, it's a great rule of thumb to live by. And as we're talking about seasonal affective disorder, ways to kind of prevent that, thinking back to before winter comes, as you talked about, you know, you might recognize it in January, but we can prevent it if we do some things in September. So maintaining our social connections, getting outside every day, even if it's a cloudy day, that exposure to the natural sun helps us. Eating healthy, exercise 5 days a week, 30 minutes a day. Those normal things that our doctors talk to us about for physical health also apply to mental health. And so the more of those, the more we follow our doctor's recommendations, the healthier we are physically and mentally.
How hard is it? How much benefit or how much training is put into the average general practitioner? I know I just was at the doctor a couple of weeks ago, and a third-year student was following him around to see if that was the specialty that he wanted to be in. And when you become a general practitioner, how much training does the GP get to kind of identify if somebody's going through a mental health? Because, I mean, my doctor always asks me how I'm feeling, you know, blah, blah, blah. But she checks my lungs. She checks my ears. She asks me some general questions. Of course, she knows, and she is the one in charge of regulating my, I don't go to a psychiatrist for my problems. I used to, but now I'm just regulating my medication. So how well-trained is the actual general practitioner to diagnose somebody with a problem?
Better than they used to be. They've integrated that more, and is my understanding, to their residency and training programs. However, most general practitioners that I've worked with over the years have a limit, and that varies for them about where they'll treat. Some won't treat ADHD, for example, because of the stimulant medications that are commonly used to treat. Others will to some degree, as long as they can get stability fairly quickly. A lot of people have done exactly what you just talked about, which is they'll see a psychiatrist to get on a good regimen of medication and then do some follow-up with their general practitioner who can just maintain that. If they start to have problems, oftentimes a GP will refer them back to the psychiatrist to kind of reassess what needs to happen. And so they certainly come with a good base of knowledge. And I think it also depends on kind of their interest level. Just like in any field, if you've got an interest in mental health, you might do some more reading or kind of develop an expertise in that area, even though you don't carry the label of a psychiatrist. Other people may not be interested at all in mental health, and so you know, they may refer those folks out a little bit sooner to someone who does.
Yeah, I think it's one of the problems that we have is that, you know, people I don't think are being notified early enough. This could also be part of your problem. You know, this could also be part of your problem. And again, some people are reluctant to share anything about their personal life. Of course, you're going to be sad when grandma dies. Of course, you're going to be sad when something truly sad happens in your life. How do we know? I mean, if we've had a major event, and like I'm talking a death, a divorce, you know, a fire, I mean, really traumatic major event, how resilient should we be? When should we start saying, gee whiz, I don't seem to be coming out of this. Maybe I better call Cornerstone.
That's a really difficult question to answer, quite honestly. And I'm glad you brought up grief. And you brought it up in a variety of life incidences that can cause grief. One of the things that I've talked a lot about with people in my own personal circle and as well as at work is grief is such a personal process for everybody. And so there are no timelines that I think are realistic to say, well, it's been this long and you aren't, or it's been this long and you are. You know, and our society doesn't really give grief the respect that I think it needs. You know, you get 3 bereavement days if your mother dies, or your spouse for that matter. Who's going to be ready to function again in 3 days after having the closest person in the world to them pass away?
Or they might be functioning very well in a peripheral way, and 3 months later it hits them. Oh,
exactly.
First time I have to ask mom for advice.
Right.
I mean, you never get over the death of your parents.
Those first anniversaries are...
Yeah, I mean, I still wish every day my dad was here I could ask him a question.
Right.
But it doesn't mean I break down and can't function.
Right.
But I think that's part of the problem is we think, just like, well, my leg is broken, the doctor said 6 to 8 weeks, and it's been 8 weeks, so okay, well, maybe it'll take 9 because I'm a slow... But there's a finite time limit on it of when you're going to, quote, get better.
Right.
Or you've got diabetes, you're going to have diabetes the rest of your life, but you can control it. And every day you have to work to control it. With mental health, you just have to say, this is it. I've got to work on this now. I've got to know that this is part of my makeup. There's nothing to be ashamed of. And it's certainly no problem to call and ask for help. How can people get in touch with Cornerstone?
They can reach us at 217-222-8254. That area code is important. I just read an article this morning.
That's the Mary Griffith Show tomorrow. We're going to have to talk about
Saturday,
area codes. Yeah.
So please include that 217. You can find us on the web at cornerstone-quincy.org. And we do have a Facebook page. You can search for Cornerstone Foundations for Families on Facebook and find us there as well. Drew Quintero, our marketing and development director, does a great job of posting motivational things as well as informational articles, as well as information about Cornerstone.
Okay, great. Cornerstone, they'll be our guests every month. And we're looking forward to learning a little bit more about our mental health because, folks, it's just as important as your blood sugar and your cholesterol. You've got to have good mental health, and there's a way to get it. And so call Cornerstone today if you need help, 217-222-8254. Tomorrow we will talk about the new telephone overlay. It's going to be a nightmare. Stay tuned.